morning. You've tuned in to The Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY. It's Wednesday, October 9th, and I'm Jack Peterson sitting in for Chris Bessler this morning. We are here joined by candidates for Idaho Legislative District 1, House Seat A. The incumbent is Republican Mark Sauder. Good morning, Mark.
Hi, how you doing?
Just fine. And the Democratic candidate for this office is Karen Mattei. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. And we will start alphabetically with you with just a brief opening statement. Would you like to introduce yourself to the listening audience? And if you can, touch on your experience and qualification for office and answer that all-important question of why are you running for this seat?
Yeah, well, good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us at this early hour. I was, for the better part of 20 years, a journalist, mostly in print, large newspapers. I did do some public radio and magazine work. And then I transitioned later on in my career into the nonprofit sector, where I managed communications for an NGO serving landmine victims in Southeast Asia and Afghanistan, and then later managed communications for a large humane society. Simply put, I am running because I want to be part of the solution to a number of issues affecting our community in Bonner, communities in Bonner and Boundary Counties. And I believe that I have the skills to bring to the job and do a good job. I know how to study issues in depth. I know how to read and interpret complicated documents and how to have difficult conversations and find common ground. And I will always consult stakeholders affected by a bill before voting for it. And probably most importantly, I will not work for the Democratic Party. I will work for the people.
Okay. And Mr. Sauder, you are the incumbent. So Representative Sauder, would you introduce yourself? For those who aren't aware, who are you and why are you running?
Okay. Mark is fine.
Okay.
Thank you. And thanks for having me this morning, or us, really.
Yeah.
I fell in love with this area back in the 60s when I visited Priest Lake with my parents. So I've come back and forth a few times. And then in the 90s, I bought some property here that I still own, some forest land, and finally retired from the fire service after 30 years in 2012 and came up. So I've been here ever since. I'm a community volunteer with the high school and Rotary and the fire districts. I've been here interviewed about fire prevention stuff on this station, so I'm grateful for that. I'm married. I have a blended family, three adult children. I've served our area for the last 2 years. I've been on the education, agriculture, and the judiciary rules committees, plus obviously working on the floor of the House. My priorities are that we have a sustainable community. I think everybody here really wants something that's sustainable, meaning that we can raise our kids here, that they may go away occasionally to train and learn, but that they would want to come back and that we can raise families here and that we can have a multi-generational place. That means that we have a good education system, a good healthcare system, a good infrastructure system, but we mind our public safety issues. We watch our jobs and training, and we have a good business and commercial environment. So it's really that balance, I think. We really need all of it. We can't really be missing very many elements. And why I'd like to come back, I'm asking for a vote so I can continue to address some of the problems that we have. I've had two sessions of experience. I've passed five bills this year that all help our district. But specifically, we need to make improvements to our women's health statutes. Our fire and EMS systems both need statute changes. We need to address more property tax issues. We can get into that later. And we need to help our educational system. So that's really why. I mean, there's just work to be done, and I'd like to continue to do it.
Well, that leads right into the first question, and I think you kind of started to answer it. But if you could pick, let's say, three issues, the biggest issues for you in this race that you'd like voters to consider, what are your top legislative priorities? I guess
I think we need to address our women's health issue and healthcare in general. We need a women's health or a mother's health exemption in our abortion standards, so we can give clear, make it clear for our medical community that they have the support of our state to make good, solid decisions based on science and research. Those are tough things to do, but I know that's one thing that we can that I'm willing to bring, and I know that there's support from the Idaho Medical Association to do it as well, because we need to give our doctors a good foundation to work from. We have some issues here locally. We closed our OBGYN unit a couple of years ago, and partially because of a doctor shortage, and it's tough to recruit doctors to come up here. So I think giving them some good clear guidance on what our statutes are would be helpful. We're kind of vague right now, and I think that needs to be addressed. We also have doctor education programs that we have with ISU and lots of different systems that I've also supported in budget meetings. So okay. That's the number one. You asked briefly, yeah. I'll just jump in and say we have to some property tax issues. Right now, homeowners, residential pays about 75% of the burden for property tax in our state, and we need to address that. And then finally, short answer for the schools. We have a funding formula that we use for students and for school operations, and it's all about average daily attendance. And somehow we need to have a part of that be rural schools and how to address that. And we also have to have special ed into that formula. So schools, property tax, and women's health. Thank you.
Okay, that's three. And Karen, for you, same question. Yeah. If you could identify your top three.
Thank you, Jack. Yes, I think it is very important to so many folks in our community to be able to have their children come back and live here and raise families here. And I think in order to do that, we really have to address the cost of living here in our resort-oriented community. And there are ways to do that. One is, finding a permanent long-term solution to lowering property taxes, and I have ways to do that. The other thing is funding childcare. The Department of Health and Welfare recently cut off access to a subsidy program that helped a lot of low-income families and left many families in the lurch. There was a story in the Capital Sun this morning about that. Other than the cost of living, and I also want to say that the legislature does need to fund affordable housing. The state doesn't. It's one of only three states that do not fund affordable housing. So all of those things are pertinent to lowering the cost of living for all of our Idaho families, not just families with kids, but all families. Healthcare is near and dear to my heart. I know a lot of people have seen my signs out there that say, bring back our doctors, and they ask what it means. And it is not a pro-abortion stance. I do want to make that clear. We did lose our labor and delivery. We have lost all four of our OBGYNs here. We have lost more than a quarter across the state. And now 59% of our family practitioners are leaving or thinking about leaving. So I would argue that it has gone beyond a women's health care issue and that Idaho is now in a full-blown health care crisis. Mark mentioned a health exception to the abortion ban. I think that is the least that we can do at this point. And last session, House Minority Leader Ilana Rebel did introduce a bill to do that and didn't get very far with it. There was a lack of support. And I've been told by a number of citizen and physicians group that they, and this is the word that they use, that they begged GOP legislators to do something and amend the extreme abortion ban, and nothing was done, which is why a lot of them joined forces and filed an initiative for the 2026 ballot to restore our reproductive rights. So a lot needs to be done there. I've worked with BGH administrators to kind of spread the word about what they're doing to bring back labor and delivery. I've written about it for the Reader. I've had them come and talk to women's groups. It's a complex problem and will require some heavy lifting on local, state, and federal levels. But they are making progress, and I would like to continue to support them in that progress as a legislator. What have I not addressed? Schools. Glad we're not kept to 2 minutes here. So schools, just very quickly, yes, I do think that the way that funds are allocated to our school districts needs to change, and I do believe that Superintendent Critchfield is working on something to that effect. Our rural districts always seem to get the smallest piece of the pie, and we did make some progress. I thought 521, the school facilities bill, was a step in the right direction, but really ultimately doesn't help our schools all that much. And as we know, West Bonner School District has closed its junior high school. Priest Lake Elementary is hanging on by a thread. So much more needs to be done. The legislature needs to honor its constitutional obligation to properly fund our public schools. It was directed to do so by the state Supreme Court years ago, and I don't feel that it has really met that obligation.
Let's you guys both identified similar areas here as your top priorities, at least your focus. You both mentioned women's health and schools as among your top three, and then kind of overlapping between, you know, the property taxes issue and an overall cost of living for you, Karen. Yeah. I will, instead of getting right into those issues, I guess let's stick to the script, and I will ask you, Karen, how do you feel the Idaho legislature in the last two sessions addressing these issues and others? How do you feel the Idaho legislature performed, has been performing? Has it been productive or not in recent years?
I think, as I said, regarding school funding, at least we're having the conversation now about funding school facilities, and I attribute some of that momentum to some excellent reporting by the Idaho Statesman and other media outlets, putting a little bit of pressure on the legislature to fulfill its constitutional obligation. So I think we're making progress. I just don't think that we've gone far enough. And I think there are some solutions out there. One that's been floated, the OPE, Office of Public Education, identified $5.2 billion in sales tax exemptions that have not been reviewed since the 1960s. So I think it's now that Idaho is one of the fastest or is the fastest growing state in the country, we can look at some of those. And it's been said that if we just take about 10% of those and declare them obsolete, it would free up about $500 million a year for school facilities. So I think that makes a lot of sense. I'd like to pursue that line of thought. As far as Idaho families, I do think that the legislature, the state, and I have to say the GOP, because they are the majority party and have been for 30 years, has failed Idaho families. I mentioned cutting off access. Well, first of all, they cut the budget to the Idaho Child Care Program, and then they projected that they would be over budget and cut off enrollment with 2 days' notice, leaving many, many families in the lurch. And that does contribute to our economy. It hurts our economy as a whole. If both parents can work, or if it's a single mom, she can't go out and work. So what is she supposed to do? The other thing is that, as I said, we do not fund affordable housing. We're one of only three states that contribute $0 to affordable housing. That's a huge issue for families here, especially families that want their own children to come back and be able to raise their families here. We, as a state, we make it difficult for pregnant women to qualify for Medicaid. We did extend postpartum coverage to 1 year, from 6 months to a year. And that was overdue. That I know that that was addressed a number of times, didn't pass, and finally did in this last session. So I'm grateful for that. But we still continue to make it harder for pregnant women to, and children, to qualify for Medicaid compared to other states.
Mark, to you, you were in the legislature for the last session, but going back before that and including last session, how do you feel the legislature has been performing? Has it been productive or not?
I think we've done okay. There's always room for improvement. That's just the way I look at things. Our first session in 23, we reduced our property tax for homeowners by about 15 to 18%, which is a monumental drop. This year, we House Bill 521 assigned over $1 billion to school facilities and paying down their, making it money available for school improvements. And then actually in 2023, we also did some levy pay down money for all of our school districts. So both years we've addressed schools, levies, and school facilities, and also property tax reform or reductions. We also did minor reductions to our income tax and flattened out that income tax system. So for those issues, I think there's some improvement there. I think the flavor in the House is that, or the understanding in the House is that we need to do more for our schools, for facilities, for sure. So I think that's on everybody's mind. I think it's homespun that everybody going in knows that their schools, especially the rural representatives, all know that our system needs work. I think there's ways to look at it. I think we should do some kind of a review, just like the state did with maintenance on all of their buildings. They did a study statewide. They're finishing it up right now, and they're going to come back with good data on the schools all the deferred maintenance projects across the state. Do the same thing with schools and come up with a good data set on what we need to do to address our rural school issues that we have for construction. I think it's going to be tough. We talked last session at the very end about our tax exemptions and looking at, there's about 600 of them. So certainly those need to be evaluated. But I'm sensing that clawing those back is not going to be easy. That's not to say that we shouldn't look at them. I think we should. But I do think we need to look at our savings buckets. We've topped all of them off for a rainy day. If our funding continues or is it similar, then those buckets don't need to be filled this year. So I think it's time that we look at more school, more use of those dollars. But there's also a pushback from some that we shouldn't have those buckets too full, because after all, that's public money and it's just sitting. So we're going to have to strike a balance. And that's really the core issue in the Capitol, is how you balance being careful with your taxes and being careful with your investments and how you spend all the money. That's really a balance of things. So there's lots of different opinions on that. And I do think we made some minor improvements to women's health. In 2023, we passed, I think it was House Bill 374, that clarified some of the different abortion issues and definitions. That was an improvement. We can always do more. And here I am saying, send me back and I'd like to, I'll do the women's health one. But also this year we passed the Medicaid for new moms. I think the numbers actually are 60 days. It went to 12 months, not 6 months. We passed a contraception extension from 3 months to 6 months. And we also restarted the MMRS program, which is a maternal mortality program. In 2022, we had, I think it was 18 moms that passed away with either during pregnancy or within a year afterwards. And of those 18, the report was 17 were preventable. So I think it's good that we got back in the game and we passed that bill so we can get our study back and we can learn from it. So we have lots to improve, but I think overall we made some positive change and with our legislative, the two sessions. Thank you.
Starting with you, Mark, you mentioned property taxes and the taxes in general, I guess. The tax system, that includes sales tax, property tax, and income tax. Is it how would you address this situation? I guess you've identified it kind of as an area that you'd like to address. What specifically would you do to change it?
75% of our property tax is paid by residential property owners. Mm-hmm. And that's not just in-state, that's out-of-state owners. And it's also apartment buildings, 4 units and less, I believe, they're still considered residential. So that's a pretty significant part of our property tax burden. And Idahoans pay almost 50% of that money, for our own property, our own homeowners. So I think at least we need to change the homeowner's exemption. We need to update that. It's $125,000. It's not nearly what it was percentage-wise when it started out. And that number used to be indexed a few years ago. They took the indexing away and just went to a flat amount. I think there's an appetite to change that and update it. I don't have an exact number. For you, I think we need to do the science and math on it and come up with a better number, but at least go get an up-to-date number as that property exemption. I'm not sure if we can get the annexation, if we can get the indexing or not. That would be a great plus too, but it needs to be up-to-date. The other thing I think we need to look at is how we can deal with the assessment changes that people get. If you get a new home on your street or there's a new evaluation for somebody doing improvements, that can really increase the rate of your property tax. And I think we need to look at some kind of averaging instead of having it go on a year by year. It needs to be over 3 years or 5 years and kind of dull that spike, because I think it's the unpredictability of our property tax that also is troubling for people. And then last on that, we can do some more work on our circuit breaker system. People need to understand the circuit breaker system and make sure that if they qualify, that they use it. Thank you.
I'll follow up on that in just a minute, but Karen, to ask the same question, just the tax system in general, the division between property taxes, sales tax, income tax, and changes you'd make to that
right
system.
Okay, well, regarding property taxes, I really like a bill that was introduced last session by a Republican lawmaker, Bruce Skaug out of Nampa, that would restore the index to the homeowner's exemption so that once again our exemptions can rise gradually along with home values. Now, that was discontinued in 2016, and the exemption was capped at a little over $100,000. And when that happened, commercial property taxes went down, and something that I think Mark has alluded to, and homeowner property taxes went up. So I really like the idea of bringing them back. What Representative Skaug would do would be to start it at where it left off in 2016, which would be like a little over $226,000, mm-hmm. Around there, and then have it go from there. And I think that would do a lot to equal the playing field between commercial property owners and homeowners. So I like that. I like that solution. Apparently, it did have a lot of bipartisan support in the last session, so I hope it comes back. Regarding income, state income tax, we have a flat system, and we still have a situation in which our middle-income families are paying a larger share of their income in state taxes than folks who are making $500,000 a year, and I think that's just wrong. So I would like to see us move to a more progressive tax system.
circling back, Mark, can you tell me what that circuit breaker system is briefly?
It's based on people having equity in their, well, let's see, it's based on income and property value. So if I think that you get the most, you can get up to $1,500 off of your property tax, certain qualifying people. You have to be over 65. I think the income rate is, I think, $35,000 a year for the qualifying, and then you get a little less of a break as your income goes up. I think it even goes up to about it's $55,000 this year, I think, is the top out. And I think it goes up to double the value, the average value of a residence in that county. So in our area, I think it's, 425 is the number that comes to mind. I could be wrong on that. So it'd be up to $850,000 for a residence. So that's a good number, you know, some good numbers to look at. But I think people need to know it. I think there's thousands of people that use it across the state. It does not cost our taxpayers in our county. Actually, there's state funding that backfills the counties for that circuit breaker. There's also a deferred tax possibility for those that can't pay their taxes. They can, as long as there's equity in the home, the state will actually give them just, you can forego your tax. And ultimately, once you move out of the house, you'll have to pay it. But the state offers a program that way as well. So you don't have to get booted out of your house, if in crude way to say it. But there's a way that you can stay, and that the state will sit and wait for you to live out your time and then move on. But people need to, I think, understand and know about those two options so they can make their choices. And then I think there's always room for readdressing those. And I think the dates for filing it, I just went to a tax seminar a couple weeks ago, and I think we need to make some statute changes so those dates work out with people, so they know when to file for those programs.
Let's move on. Look at the time fly. Let's move on to education here. I know for many years has been in the very bottom among the 50 states in funding education, but last session, the legislature did approve, and it was signed into law by the governor, House Bill 521, under which Idaho will spend an additional $1.5 billion over the next decade to help building construction and maintenance for schools statewide. So first question to Karen is, would you have supported or opposed the bill 521 had it passed?
I would have supported it. I would have supported it with reservations, as as I alluded to earlier. At least we're having the conversation, and we haven't had it for 30 some odd years. However, it does not go far enough for our rural districts, and I say that with the caveat that our rural districts don't even have the benefit of that federal designation because of Sandpoint. So they continually get the smallest piece of the pie, and I believe the governor's facilities bill would allocate about $14 million for Lake Pendere district, a little over $3 million for West Bonner, $3 to $4 million, and then in comparison, Boise Independent would get $40 million. So there is definitely, you know, a bias built in toward the larger urban districts. And so I think that our allocation process needs to change. And there was a bill introduced last session that would set up a permanent fund in the state treasury and allocate funds based more on need. And that also comes from a Republican lawmaker. So I think that is the direction that we need to move in. And because these rural districts have been so underfunded, and the schools I know, Boundary County, West Bonner, and even some of our high school programs here have are in pretty rough shape. I know our high school here, I toured it. I mean, each of the districts have been engaged in a facility study, and it's been ongoing. And I did tour the high school with that committee. And it amazes me how many teachers, especially in the career ed program, are in their own off hours, their personal time, writing grants to obtain necessary equipment so that the programs can be competitive on a state level. So,
any changes to the school funding? Anything specifically that you'd propose or support for that?
Well, I said that one idea would be to tap into those sales tax exemptions that haven't been reviewed. At least let's see what's out there and whether we really need them. That's $5.2 billion is a lot of money, and that's just for 1 year.
So. Yeah. Mark, did you support or oppose House Bill 521?
I supported House Bill 521. Mm-hmm. And yes, it is ADA, average daily attendance driven. We tried to work on that and get it changed and get some more recognition for the rural schools. We failed at that. We just didn't get that changed in the bill. I am aware that there's another rural schools bill coming. I talked to somebody about it last night or yesterday afternoon. So I know that again is going to be addressed and see if we can't get it to the finish line. So I think 521 is a good start. Like we alluded to, it's been 30 years since we really did a facilities bill, and it needs, we just need to keep working at it. I think it's a good start and a good, just a good way to go. And as far as the school everyday operations funding goes, that's also an ADA-driven formula, and we need to work. We need to work hard to get a rural schools factor in that formula, and also a special ed formula part in that, because special ed kids need extra funding to address some of those needs, and right now there's a lot of special ed, and there's just not as much funding for it. So that'll help our districts out as well. And I think there's recognition of that, but we need to get it done.
But let's briefly touch on school vouchers. There's arguments that would arguments for and against, but I guess do either of you take a stance? Karen, what's your stance on the proposal for school vouchers?
I am opposed to school vouchers. And I look at other states where vouchers have been improved, using taxpayer dollars for private and religious schools. And every time they set a ceiling, they would blow way past that ceiling. So it turned out to be an extremely costly program. But I also feel that when our public schools are some of the least funded in the country, that we can't talk about siphoning off taxpayer dollars for private and religious schools. And where do you draw the line? Not everybody's a Christian. Where do you draw the line in terms of who gets funding and how and why? And it just seems like it would be a whole can of worms. But mainly, I believe that everybody deserves or has an equal right to a high-quality education. Now, our schools have, handicapped as they are, have been doing a pretty good job of educating our students. However, if we were to fund them properly, think about how much better of a job they could do. And then maybe, there wouldn't be so much noise about vouchers.
Mark, do you take a stance on school vouchers?
Mm-hmm. Sure, I voted against all the voucher bills as part of the House Education Committee. Last cycle, in 2024, we had essentially a voucher bill that came through our Tax and Rev Committee, and that also failed. I think there's a few different issues here. One of them is accountability. None of the bills that have come forward have had any accountability in them. And I think Idahoans want. They expect the public schools to meet standards and do, you know, take testing and all that. Yet they all the voucher bills, there's always an empty spot when it comes to accountability. So I think accountability is an issue. Our public wants to know where and how well its money is spent. Idaho already has, I think we're the top three in the country as far as school choice goes, between public schools, charter schools, and all the different abilities that families have to transfer their kids around. Like it or not, about 10% of the kids from West Bonner School District have moved on, and many have come over to Sandpoint. So there's a redistribution issue there that's very tough on West Bonner. But the reality is those kids and families had an option. So we do have school choice in Idaho, and we're one of the top states with offerings. In our area, it's a little tougher because we don't have as many choices. But in Treasure Valley, for instance, they have lots of schools. But we do have several in our area. So I think school choice is a possibility. There's limited money to spend on our public education. It's a fight. I mean, let's just be realistic. About 50% of our state budget goes to education. To add on public or private school funding and add on to it would be just that much tougher for public schools if, in fact, it's the same number that we're willing to spend. The cost for infrastructure for schools is the same. If you lose 10% of your kids, you can't close the school. So funding that classroom, funding that teacher, and all the associated costs with it still stays there. It's not like they can just back off 10% of their heating and electric bill. Mm-hmm. So, that's my point. Thank you.
Let's move on to the big one. Another issue you guys both mentioned as one of your kind of top concerns, healthcare, and more specifically, women's healthcare. A little recent background here. The institution of the abortion ban in Idaho, with few exceptions for pregnant patients' health, has been cited as a reason for our hospital here, Bonner General Health, to discontinue obstetric care. Doctors statewide fear they could face criminal charges. Just a couple weeks ago, on September 24th, Dr. Amelia Huntsberger, an OBGYN doctor for 11 years here in Sandpoint, testified before the U.S. Senate and said she left, or before a committee, and said she left because, quote, it no longer felt safe to practice medicine. It has led many other doctors to leave. Do you see a need to address this, and do you see a way to address this? I will start with you, Mark.
Sure, absolutely. We need to address it. Whether some believe it is an issue or not with our state statutes, regardless, the market is, we have doctors that are no longer here, and it's incredibly difficult to recruit or even to bring in a temporary ad locum doctor. So we need to address it. A women's health exception, I think, is the beginning. I think there's a survey out there somewhere about the doctors that are considering leaving the state. If a women's health exception was added to our state statute, the majority of those doctors say they would stay. So I think we need to eat the elephant one bite at a time. Let's fix that. There's other things to fix in our, you know, healthcare statutes. But first, I think we need to do that one. It's a heavy lift. Most of the people that voted for the different trigger laws, a number of them are still in Boise. So it's going to be a challenge to have them completely roll over and change their votes on tough votes that they took already. But I know the healthcare issue is something that we could deal with. And then I think we can start from there. So then recruiting doctors, there's just lots of little pieces of it to work on. But I do think changing everything with a broad brush and simply deleting certain statutes, that's going to be a tougher road to go. It's not that we shouldn't continue to work on that, but doing it all at once, like we tried with House Bill 70 or was tried with House Bill 721, that's a pretty heavy lift, and it didn't go anywhere. So
Karen, about women's
well,
health.
we've kind of dived into this a little bit already, and I am it's interesting to hear my opponent address the women's health care exception or health exception to the abortion ban, because I haven't heard that up until this point. I do think that is the place to start, and however, I think we can go beyond that. And the chief medical officer at Bonner General has stated, and I agree with her, that really what needs to happen is that we need to keep government out of our doctors' offices. I trust our doctors with all their years of training to know what's best. I've looked at the health and welfare statistics on abortions and who had them, why they had them, when they had them. And there is no typical abortion. And we didn't do a whole lot of abortions in Idaho in the first place, at least elective abortions. So it begs the question of whether or not that whole ban was needed in the first place. But I do believe that, you know, the legislature could have done something. The GOP could have done something. I'll say it again, and they did nothing. This could have been a moot point. This could have been over and done. And our doctors, you know, we could have already recruited OBGYNs here for Bonner General if that had been done. The other thing is that I think the reason that we are seeing now family practitioners talk about leaving or leaving is the fact that the legislature continues to criminalize doctors. And I'm not talking about the trigger law. I'm talking about three other bills that the GOP unanimously supported in the last session that criminalized doctors. Now, some of those bills had some components that I could have stood behind, but each one contained a poison pill, and that was criminalizing doctors. And so the legislature has constantly sent out the message and throughout the last session that it is not safe for doctors to practice to provide the best standard of care here in Idaho.
That is I guess that's the healthcare question. Did either of you guys, I guess, Mark, I'll ask you if you wanted to respond.
Sure.
She mentioned that you voted for three bills that she would have opposed there in that session.
I'm not sure which bills that Karen's referring to. I will say I've talked about women's health and the women's health exception. I talked about it during the primary season as well. And I worked on it in 2023 when we did House Bill 374. So we didn't get it in 2023. I continued to talk about it. So I don't think this is something that just popped up. I've worked with the Idaho Medical Association since I've been in the legislature trying to make improvements to our statutes. So it takes time to get things done. And I'm not happy about it necessarily, but that's how the system works. I'm very pragmatic about that. And as far as the different bills, yes, there are challenges in almost all the bills. It's rare that you like 100% of a bill. Occasionally you have to, or almost always, you have to live with a little bit of the bad to get the majority of the good. So I know that's just what we have to do. We have to weigh in who actually, you know, who benefits from this and who does not. So those are tough choices, and lots of these decisions are gray areas. Another issue is that a bill will come forward. There'll be some speculation that it could cause a problem. Sometimes those are addressed the next year. I know we had a parental rights bill that passed. There's already been discussion on amending that this session. So I'd like to, you know, I'm working hard to get reelected, and then I can go back in, because I've complained and had comments about that in the Judiciary Rules Committee back then. So I know there's things that I'd like to see readdressed, but there's still some benefit to the bill that went through. So you have to weigh that out, and I've done my best to make those tough decisions. So thanks.
Can I just address the parental consent law, the new one? And I believe that when the testimony, there were no medical providers that supported that bill. And I've had a lot of conversations with our local providers about it, and including folks with the Department of Public Health. And one provider, just as an example, here in Sandpoint, about 10% of the young people that she was seeing at that point did not have parental consent, but they were, she said, they were smart young women. They were taking great care of their bodies. They were using birth control, and they were getting STD screenings. She said when the parental consent law took effect on July 1st, those young women completely fell off their radar. And to a person, the providers are telling me that they are afraid that this bill is going to result in increased teen pregnancies, increased drug abuse, increased sexually transmitted diseases, and mental health issues, especially for our LGBTQ youth who don't feel like they can, who might not feel like they can get counseling or seek mental health support. And some fear that we will also see an increase in suicides in that population. So I don't see a whole lot that's good about that. And that is one bill that does criminalize doctors. Mm.
This is Senate Bill 1329. Mark, did you vote for or against that bill?
I voted for it. I think in the situation, you know, one of the situations for a pregnant 14-year-old, I do think the parents should be involved in that situation. And I do think that they should be notified. And I've not heard that there's a lot of pushback on the more serious issues here. I hear a majority of our parents want to understand and know that. I also talk to behavioral health people. We have one that sits a few seats away from me in the house. He said job one, when you have an initial issue like this, is to get the parents involved. So it didn't sound like that was that bad of a lift. And again, we've been in this for 2 or 3 months. If we have an issue, I think let's deal with it. But as far as parents knowing, I think, you know, parents should be in the know on what goes on. The pushback that I hear about the bill right now is from school districts. They don't know that informing them that a Band-Aid was put on their child is something that's mission critical. But regardless, if there's an issue, then we need to continue to follow up. But having parents be in the know, I think, is important, and I think our parents want to know that. So,
well, it hasn't been that long, but you know, I mean, it has been a long time since I was a young person. But I don't think in most families, you know, that parents know everything, and it really is ultimately about protecting our youth. And I do believe also that law enforcement has expressed concern about the bill in cases of rape and incest. And unfortunately, that happens, you know, in Idaho quite a bit.
Let's move on to another area of, I don't actually remember if this is an area of agreement or disagreement, but we're closing in on it. Let's talk briefly about Proposition 1 before we end our conversation here today. The Open Primaries Initiative that will be on the ballot in November. If approved, it would end Idaho's closed Republican primary, and all voters, regardless of party affiliation, could vote in the primary election. It would also allow voters to rank candidates in order of preference. I believe it's Karen's turn to answer first. Do you favor or oppose Proposition 1?
Yeah, I have said for several months now that I support Proposition 1. It will give a voice to all voters, including our 250,000 some odd independent voters, and many of whom are our servicemen and women. So I think that is critically important. I do think that it will allow voters to vote for the person rather than the party, and require politicians to be accountable to a broader spectrum of voters, which is hugely important right now. Ranked choice voting, the opposition likes to make it look like it is very confusing, but if you read about it, just take a little bit of time and read about it. It is not confusing, and it's important to remember too that the voter has the option of choosing one candidate and having their vote count. And I don't think that's something that is brought up very often, but that the ranked choice part of it is optional for the voter.
Mark, Proposition 1, do you take a stance in favor or oppose?
My stance is I'm in favor of the initiative process for our state. It's in our mm-hmm. Constitution. I think it's an important piece of our governance. I don't think it's appropriate for an elected official, especially a state one, to go ahead and tell people this is how they should vote. I do think our residents are incredibly intelligent and that they can see, they can read all they want. There's been a state document that came out that explained it. There's 42 different changes to state statute involved with this initiative. And I think it's just a good thing for the voters to study up on and make their own choice. The initiative actually, there's two issues. There's one, changing our tried and true secure elections system the way we do it today. And it's been done that way for years and years and years. And it's been audited and we're very comfortable with that, I believe. The second piece is the open primary piece. The way I understand it, the open primary, the way it's written, it will not go back to the pre-2011 system of a wide open primary. So mm-hmm. there's adequate change. I think residents and voters need to look at that and then make their own decision. And then that decision will guide me if I can get reelected when we go back in, because ultimately the legislature has to accept this. And I will vote the way our voters vote and support that. So they'll be really giving me some good direction.
Mm-hmm. Can I just one little addition mm-hmm. to that? So I feel a little bit differently about the need for voters to know where candidates stand on these key issues, and especially initiatives, because even if Prop 1 passes, the legislature will be able to vote to repeal it. And that happened. They've tried again and again with Medicaid expansion, so it's not like it never happened. So I do feel that as much information as we can give our voters about where we stand, the better off they will be.
And I have one comment on that. Mm-hmm. Medicaid expansion passed here and was accepted by the legislature. I think the last initiative that was overturned was term limits. So, and I have no plan or no thought of overriding what our vote's going to be. So, but anyway, that's where I stand. I'm going to vote with our voters. And, but Medicaid expansion did go through and it was controversial, but, the legislature followed through and did it. So,
but there have been repeated attempts to repeal it.
We were really closing in on the full hour there. Time flies. And I believe, Karen, you opened. I asked you to yep. deliver the first opening statement. So I'll let Mark deliver the first, I guess, closing statement to give you kind of a guideline, I guess, what differentiates you as a candidate and why should people vote for you, if you were just briefly to sum up.
Sure. Brief. I'm asking for your vote. I want to go back to Boise and stay here and to continue to serve our community. I've done so for the last 2 years. I have experience. I know the trail to get bills passed. I've passed 5 local bills in 2024 alone. I want to keep our area and our state sustainable, and I think it's going to take a big effort to continue to our progress, for whether it's property tax reform or education or healthcare. But I've been successful running bills and I know I can continue to do that. So, and I have the relationships to get things done in Boise. Thank you.
Karen, go ahead.
Yeah. I, for one, am not satisfied with the status quo. We've talked about that during this interview. Our doctors are leaving. Schools are closing. Property taxes are still high. So I do believe that if we are to truly shift the conversation, that we need to restore balance to the legislature, and that means electing Democrats. And returning to the days when Republicans and Democrats could sit down together and hash out some of these issues. And I do think that it is one of the only ways that we're going to blunt the bullying tactics of the Idaho Freedom Foundation and influence from special interests and outside money. So I am asking for your vote as well.
Last words, how can people find out more about each of you? Mark, website, social media, contact information, I guess. How do people find out more?
It's Mark Sauter for Idaho is my website. You can contact me through there. People can call me. I have a cell, 208-627-6288. That's a public number as well. And I go to every community event that I can think of or see. So I try and be out and about as much as I can.
And Karen?
Yeah, my website is kmattee, M-A-T-T-H-E-E, for Idaho, all spelled out. I'm extremely active on social media. I kind of go against the grain as a candidate there. And again, it just speaks to the fact that I feel like the more voters know about me, the better off they are. And I, too, am out and about, and I'm very happy to talk to people. I've been at almost every farmer's market. I have door-knocked to over 1,500 voters, mostly unaffiliated and Republican voters. So I am always available to talk.
Karen Mattei and Mark Sauter, candidates for Idaho Legislative District 1. Thank you both for your time and for participating this morning, for a good conversation. And now we'll turn it over to our regularly scheduled programming. It's time for Bird Note here on 88.5 KRFY, then Otto's Eclectic Mix, all day long after that. Thanks for listening.